Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes. My name's Tim.
And this is Chris.
This is Adam.
And today, instead of giving a hot take review, we're going to be talking about 16 games that we played over this last weekend at BGHT Big Bear. Very exciting time. Did you guys have fun?
A lot of fun. Tons of fun, tons of great games, and only mild burnout this time.
Yeah, I'll second the mild burnout. But yeah, so much fun. It was a great time. And I'd never really spent a lot of time in Big Bear before. I mean, I'd visited, very briefly. I'd been through it and lived only an hour and a half away from it when I was in Long Beach. So it was a lot of fun to check it out and enjoy some of the good restaurants and even play a little bit of pinball. So that was a real treat for me too.
Nice. Well, I've got a poll to jump into before we get into the games, before we get into our BGHTCon coverage. And the poll is relevant. I said, how many hours can you play board games straight before you get burned out and need a break? And the options I gave, less than 3 hours got 9%, less than 8 hours got 27%, 1 day got 24%, several days got 36%, and unlimited got 3%. Now, we played for several days, about 3.5 or something like that, full days of gaming with mild, with very short meal breaks, a couple of little other minor activities, but otherwise pretty straight gaming. So I think I fall on the several days category, but I think that was, that's probably about the upper limit of where I'm going to enjoy myself before I need to take a little break. How about you guys?
Yeah, these cons that where we, we call them cons, but where we get together for a board gaming weekend, it varies. Sometimes this is the one I've had the least amount of burnout on. I think the previous ones, I'm finished by the time we're all said and done. I just get exhausted. My brain gets tired. Sometimes I don't sleep too well at some of these things. But for this one, yeah, we had nice breaks. We had that clean, fresh mountain air. We went out occasionally and walked around in it, and we got some tasty food. Some of the best food I've ever eaten in my life, as a matter of fact. And I felt relatively refreshed, and I felt great coming after. So typically, atypically, I can't usually do 3 or more days. That's about, like you said, Tim, that's about my upper limit. So I think maybe typically 1 or 2 days of game straight is good for me, but I can have a lot of fun if it's friends and casual and the pacing's right and we take some breaks. I could probably just, do this for a couple of weeks, maybe.
Nice.
Now I'm curious. It sounds like you guys didn't have so much burnout this time like we may have had in previous cons. How much of that do you think has to do with the fact that we're not doing tournament scoring anymore?
I don't know. I don't know that I felt that much different. There were nights where by the end I was just, my brain was burning and I didn't sleep well. So even this weekend was, I think I felt pretty much the same as I have on other weekends. So to me, I don't think it was too much different.
For me, Chris, I think there was an element of less intensity this time and the previous time than when we were keeping score and, fighting for the lead and all this. So yeah, I let my mind relax a little bit more. What about for you?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, my answer is about the same as you guys. 2-3 days feels great. Right about that time, I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of ready to stop. So I think these cons right now, the way we're doing them, are a perfect length. But to answer your question, Adam, I think it makes a huge difference because it seems to me that when you're playing tournament scoring, there's always I want to get the next game in because I want another chance to win. I want another chance to get more points. And so you don't feel as inclined to go out to dinner because you want to make sure you get the next game in and you can maybe push yourself a little bit harder.
Totally.
Or at least for me, I push myself a little bit harder than I might otherwise want to because I start getting competitive. And so to me, I think that's wonderful not doing the competitive scoring. Any individual game doesn't matter as much, and I can really just sit down and enjoy playing the game for fun.
Agreed. 100%. It's all about exploration for me, these things, and having fun and seeing what the game has to offer. A lot more fun for me when we can approach it this way instead of keeping track of everything and getting that extra notch of intensity. No thanks.
Yep.
All right. Well, here's how some of our listeners responded over on Blue Sky. Joe said, when I go to conventions, I'm always amazed by the people that play from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. How is it possible without wanting to crawl into a corner and turn into a slug? I value my breaks, and also my brain is far too dumb to be engaged constantly. It needs a rest. So, Joe, I wonder what you do at conventions. Are you literally You know, like, so I went to the one big convention, BGGCon, last year, which we're all going to be going to this year. And I, from the moment I got up, I just wanted to be down in the convention halls. And I didn't always have a game running just because I, you know, wasn't there with a group of people. But I was not ready to do anything else. I never left the hall. I'm just curious, you know, what, Joe, what you do and maybe what some other people do to take breaks.
I don't think Joe's going to answer right now.
Marco said, never push my limits too much, but after 4 hours, I may start getting grumpy. Sean Franco said, several years of attending Geekway tells me that 14 hours is well within my limits. And Meeplenomics said, I haven't found my breaking point yet. I've gamed at conventions for upwards of 24 plus hours straight and only went to bed because nobody was around to play games with. Hi, my name is Dan, and I don't have a problem. I played with Dan, by the way, at BGGCon last year. Had a great time. He kept me up. He kept me up way late playing Kutnohora one night. Over on Patreon, Jason said, I love conventions and going from morning to night learning new games. Unfortunately, I'm usually looking for someone that also has that stamina and interest to do that outside of a convention setting. And then Ben said, I might be an outlier, but I enjoy games in short bursts. A game that lasts more than 90 minutes often starts to get difficult for me to enjoy. Maybe it's because I'm a runner. It's not for lack of focus or attention span. I've run marathons after all, but I like to keep moving and it's hard to stay at the table for very long. That said, playing two games that last for 90 minutes each is usually much more enjoyable for me than one that lasts 3 hours. Yeah, this is. We'll talk about a couple of games that lasted a long time this weekend and somehow didn't outstay their welcome, and then other games that were short and did this weekend. But my wife is like that. She'll sit down. We play a couple of games a week usually. Oftentimes she's the one asking for it, but it's like an hour and a half in. If it gets any longer than that, then she's getting antsy, and she's never ready for a second game after a long one like that. So. Different strokes, I suppose. I'm always looking for another game. All right, before we jump into the recap of this weekend, when this episode drops, guys, we just got a nomination for the Golden Geek Awards this year.
Yay for us.
Woo-hoo. So exciting. Second year in a row. And so if you catch this right before the awards close, I think right at the end of the month, so you might have a day or two to get in and vote. So we love it. We'd really appreciate it if you got out and gave us a vote for Best Board Game Podcast. But if you missed it, no worries. There's always next year. I'll be hitting you up again then. You know, here's the deal. Actually, if you guys all vote for us and we get the award, we can't be up next year. So you don't have to hear me pleading for your votes again in the future. So let's get that done, everybody.
Make Tim stop pandering. Let's make it happen, everybody.
The fun drive, it feels like.
All right. So we kicked off the weekend. I drove from Phoenix over to Long Beach, California, met up with Adam. And Adam and I drove up to pick Chris up at the Ontario airport, which is like an hour and a half north of there. Way worse traffic than we were expecting. Picked Chris up, got up to our house, our little rental house in Big Bear. What time was that? Like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, something like that?
Yeah, not too late. The sun was going down. It was just starting to get dark, but a little bit of daylight still.
Yeah. So we've got a tradition at these BGHT cons that there's always, of course, in these rental units, there's a best bedroom and there's a worst bedroom. And this place was no exception. The master bedroom in this place was huge. It could have fit like four beds, had a king bed in it, had its own bathroom. The middle-sized bedroom was a pretty average bedroom, probably a queen bed, normal, spacious, totally fine. And then the worst bedroom in this house was a little twin bunk bed in a tiny little space, no windows. So big difference between bunk beds and king-size bed and an attached bathroom and everything. So of course, as we always do at these conventions, as we played our first game for pick of bedroom. And the first game had to be a game that we all knew well, that we were all competitive at. And we picked Dune Imperium. How'd that play go for you guys?
Well, what's there to say about this game that we haven't said already, except I ended up with the master bedroom. That's all you need to hear right there. No, another great play. We had all the expansions going on this one. Everybody was close. Tim, he pulled out to a huge lead early on. I didn't think I had a chance. I was like, well, maybe I won't get the bunk bed this time because I had the bunk beds last time. So I was hoping for that second place. Ended up with some card play. I think I'm going to steal Chris's line here. He was talking about games. He said, it's always nice when a game feels like it makes you feel clever. So I had some quick realizations near the end of the game. Like, oh, I can do this thing and this thing and this thing, and I can get myself a few extra points. Ended up working out. I was able to pull into the lead by, I think I finished with a 2-point lead at the end. So it felt good. I always love going back to this game. So tense. Everybody goes into that last round feeling like they have a chance to win. And that's what happened here again. Another great play of Dune Imperium.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, everybody thought, or at least I thought, that Tim had this one locked because he was like way ahead. And then by the end, it was getting really close. And then I thought I was going to pull ahead because I knew I had a couple of opportunities with cards that I had. And then in the final battle, it came down to who was going to win. But Tim had sort of fallen behind in his military might. And so it was Adam and I going into this final battle where you got the, you could have come out of that battle with like 3 or 4 points. And I forget what the mistake I made was, but I was like, oh, crap, I was supposed to do this thing before and I forgot to do it. And Adam was like, yeah, man, just go ahead and do it. And so I was like, why is he being so accommodating in this? Like, and so I did. I forget what the thing was, but I did it. And then he pulled out an intrigue card that gave him a whole bunch of more swords. And he, of course, took it and got that big rockin' master bedroom. But back to the game. One of the things that I kept thinking about as I was playing this was how great this game is. But as we were playing it, how much I wanted to be playing Dune Imperium Uprising.
Oh, man.
Oh, interesting. I didn't feel that way this time. I was having so much fun playing with these mechanisms, with the immortality decks and I just love all the variety here. And we played Uprising the one time, or at least I've only played it once. And I remember loving it, but I can't remember why I liked it so much. So I was happy to be playing this Dune Imperium. And when I get back to Uprising at some point, I'll reassess. Yeah, this game was crazy. I took a picture and posted it on our Blue Sky account while we were in the middle of the game, where I was at 8 points and these guys were both sitting at 4 points. Like a 4-point swing there is pretty big in Dune Imperium. And that put me pretty close to the lead. But as they said, they both caught up. Getting down to the last battle, I was like, okay, I'm safe. One of these guys is probably going to win it, but only one of them can win it, which means that I'll still be in second place. And right after Adam pulls off the win and Chris is 1 point behind me, end game, Chris pulls out one of these end game scoring cards that gives him one more point for having like Vice Must Flow card or something like that. Totally threw me off, but you know, whatever. It was fine. I didn't spend that much time in the bedroom anyway. There's too many great things to be doing this weekend. Well, it's pretty late at that point, but we didn't want to go to bed quite yet. So one really quick game, I pulled out Sea Salt and Paper. Sea Salt and Paper is a little card game that I've talked about in the past here. Bruno Catala design. I know I played this with you guys on Board Game Arena before, but I don't think either of you guys had played this in person, as far as I remember. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I had a lot more fun with it in person than online. There's a lot, the expediency is better. We played async online. I don't think we've ever done a real time online. So having that, you know, you can't really do one of these quick card games async online. You need to have that speed and a little bit of memory. You've got the two discard piles there. That makes a big difference when you're doing it in real life rather than online. A fun little quick card game. Could go back to this one time and time again and not get sick of it, like you've said before, Tim.
Yeah, and for me, this game is not my cup of tea. I mean, this is not my natural habitat, so to speak. But I had a perfectly fun time with it. It was a fine game. And one thing that I will say about it that was very positive is the artwork on this is absolutely delightful. I like to think that it was all actual origami that was photographed. I think, Tim, you asked that question. Do you think it's really origami or somebody did this with a computer, you know, CGI or something like that? And if it was real origami, then I like it even more because I think that was really cool. There's some beautiful, really adorable artwork in there.
Well, Sea Salt and Paper didn't take our, we didn't count it as a game pick for the weekend because it's just a little evening closer. So since the winner of Dune Imperium got the best bedroom, the loser got first pick the next morning. And the game I pulled off the shelf was Pulsar 2849. This is by Vladimir Musuchi and quickly rising to be one of my favorite games. I think this is going to end up in my top 20 this year. We'll see if I get any more plays of it in. But was excited to get it played with you guys. What do you think of the drafting, the little space exploration Euro that we got a chance to bust out on Friday morning?
Yeah, this was neat, Tim. I was looking forward to this one for a long time. And then it, I don't know what happened. It's been around for a while and I never got a chance to play it. And then you started playing it and picked it up and you brought it out. And I had a lot of fun playing this. That first of all, that first thing you do, you have the dice in the different little cubbies, 1 through 6, and you put this little arrow sort of somewhere in the middle of the dice. And then, you know, if you, that was my favorite part of the game. If you pick a low dice, it's in front of that little medium spot, the mid spot, then you move forward on one of these two little tracks. And if you're behind, you know, you want to go for the big 6 and you're going to have to move backwards on one of these tracks. So that decision right there was interesting. Then after that, you have 60,000 other decisions. What are you going to go for? Are you going to go for these in-game scoring things? Are you going to try to build these tech tracks? But you only have two dice per round, three if you're lucky. You really got to go for that third dice, like we noted. And so just a billion decisions coming at you. I didn't know where to focus. There's a lot of strategies. Seems like you go. Seems like you have to focus in on one sort of area, or at least combo a bunch of things together. So a lot to think about on a first play, but a lot of fun here. I enjoyed this one a lot. Pulsar 2849.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. Interestingly, I'm not sure what this says about the game, but when you first mentioned it, Tim, just now, I had to rack my brain to remember what the game was and how it was played. So I don't know if that means it didn't particularly stand out to me as being unique, but I did have fun playing it, especially, you know, I'm hearing Adam talking about it. I'm like, oh, that's right. That was the game. And I do remember having a good time. I'll say there's a couple of good things and a couple of things I didn't like as much. I loved the resource management Euro style game, kind of with a wrapping of sci-fi. I really enjoy that. I think that was nice. I think that the thematics here were super nicely done. The little ships, the production was very pleasant. In terms of the overall mechanism set, I thought it was really enjoyable. I thought it was a good game, but I'm not sure if I'm saying exactly the same thing as Adam, but I felt like this is a game where there were so many different options of, you know, areas to pursue that I had a little trouble focusing myself on a first play. I think I would play it better in future plays. And there also definitely felt like there were times when you had to choose between doing the fun thing and doing the thing that was going to score you points. Like, you know, but, you know, buying those technologies that were going to result in endgame points were a lot less exciting than moving around the board and, say, harnessing pulsars. But sometimes that's what you needed to do. So, you know, that's always a tension when you have these kind of games, I think.
Yeah, Pulsar was another big hit for me. I was having a blast with it, but I could tell you guys were just a little less excited. I mean, like, it felt on my first play of it. This is one of those games where I was playing it the first time and just, wow, this is so cool. I love this. And Adam did call out several times during the game about how much he was enjoying the drafting part of it. But other than that, it seemed like you guys weren't super into it. But you know, I don't know, maybe on another play you'd enjoy it more. I thought it was great again. I love the drafting piece of it. I love that there's these little income opportunities you want to hit as soon as possible in the game, but they're hard to get to. And so it's just optimizing and trying to find a route to get that third dice, to get that one extra action each round. The technology variety is great every time. Yeah, I still love this. I'm hoping to get a lot more plays of it. You guys were talking about how there feels like there's so many routes to, you know, different paths to go on this. And it, for some reason, this one doesn't feel like that to me. It feels pretty streamlined, in fact. Like here, there's a few things that you are trying to get done. It was, you know, it's very easy action, but like the drafting phase goes really quickly. And then you got a couple quick actions you're going to try to do. So it feels very, very light to me, in all honesty, which it sounds like you guys didn't get that for it, but I enjoyed it. It went pretty quick and had a fun time with it.
Yeah, this is interesting, Tim. I think this highlights the differences in brains and thought processes. I can tell you really like these kind of, you know, that this thing is going to let you get this next thing and it's going to let you get this next thing. You can see that really well. I feel like, oh, if I get these little elements of the game, that's going to give me this extra dice. I need that extra dice so I can do a quick little route here. That's going to get me 10 points and this little bonus. So you're good at linking the pieces together. Whereas I know for my brain, for sure, when there's all these different components and different options, I get a little bit overwhelmed and I'm not sure, what am I going to do? Like, what are these things that link together and get the red dice? I didn't even know. I don't think I touched any of those the whole game. And that's because I just couldn't handle it. You know, that's that one extra piece. I was like, I just got to ignore that for now and concentrate on the other 20 things coming at me.
I think Adam and I actually had a really similar experience then, because I felt like, I mean, there was these big three in terms of scoring opportunities, one of which was the pulsars themselves, one of which was the technologies, and one of which was the, I forget what they were called, like radio towers.
Transmitters.
Yeah, the transmitters. And you could really go in, some combination of these was probably the right thing to do. And for me, the economy was so tight that as soon as I started trying to make a decision between the things, I started going into, like, you know, analysis paralysis, to the point of, like, you know, very quickly into brain shutdown and, okay, I'm just going to do something, you know? But having said all that, I didn't have a bad time with it. I actually enjoyed the game quite a bit and I'd happily play it again.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're spot on with each other here, Chris. I didn't even have time to look at the in-game score. Like, I should have looked at those three, I don't know what those things are called, the pink things at the end where you can trade in your cubes and get more points. So trade in more cubes and get more points. That's one thing I didn't even focus on either. I was too busy, like, oh, am I going to go on this track and get some more engineers? I'm going to draft this one. And then, oh, shoot, what am I supposed to do with this one after I draft it? I couldn't even get that far. So it was pretty tough for me here at Pulsar.
All right. So after Pulsar 2849, it was Chris's pick, and he decided to revisit a game that he'd only played once. That was Apiary by guest host Connie Vogelman from just a few weeks back. Chris, how did Apiary go for you on this round?
Apiary was a lot of fun. I think one of the reasons why I wanted to play this game again was because you guys, when we reviewed it, I think felt a little bit more enthusiastic about it than I did. I enjoyed it, but it didn't jump out at me as being, you know, as unique as maybe you guys thought it was. And so I wanted to give it another try. I generally am a super fan of most of the Stonemaier games. And this one, I loved looking at it. I loved the concept. I thought it was fascinating. And so I wanted to give the mechanisms another opportunity. And I really did enjoy this game. I think part of it stemmed from the fact that, did I win this one? No, Tim won this one. I felt competitive.
That's right.
I felt competitive on this one. And I felt like it clicked. And a lot of games, I mean, for me, a first play is a little tough, which is, you know, really difficult for a board game, you know, review show that relies on first plays, because you never feel that smart. You never feel that clever, or rarely do you feel that smart or that clever. And so it takes a little bit of, you know, a little bit of experience to be able to understand the game and to feel like you're getting good at it. And I think in this one, what really sort of clicked for me was the strategy around how you go about placing your workers to either increase the value of your workers or to not increase the value of somebody else's workers. Like, I think, Tim, you observed at one point that in a game you played, a lot of times people were taking turns specifically that didn't bump other people's workers, because then their worker would get improved. And so there was a lot more of that kind of higher level strategy. I felt like this game, we started to do that a little bit. And so I was very pleased, because I felt like now, you know, this game that I love the concept and the graphics and the art and the production, and now I felt sort of competent and very happy with the mechanisms as well. So I was very happy with this pick.
This game was still mostly a mystery to me. I enjoyed it tons, but I was lagging behind. Chris, you said it clicked for you. I think it clicked for Tim a long time ago. Maybe some part of it sort of clicked for me about halfway through the game when I was already lagging severely behind you guys. But what clicked for me this game was you really need to start at the end with the high point scoring tiles. What are they called, Tim?
Carving action.
That's right. Yep. You need to look at those first and kind of plan your whole strategy around those, or see what you can get out of those. And from turn one, I think you have to start eyeballing those and figuring out how that's going to work. You can't dilly-dally. We can't run a smooth space beehive and dilly-dally around. You got to set your goals early and go for it. So that part clicked me. If I was going to play again, which I do want to play again, I'm going to start from there and then go backwards. But this piece where getting your bees to increase early or not have someone else's bees increase early, that's still confusing. Makes a little sense, because the 4B actions are so much better than the non-4B action. So that makes sense to me, but as far as how to do that efficiently, I have no clue, but I want to go back to this game and keep trying.
Yeah, I had another blast with it. This is probably my 10th play of Apiary at this point or something like that, and it feels like every game I can find this couple little synergies that I'm trying to put together and optimize with. And I didn't get any great carving tiles, but Chris stole that one that Adam was really focused on and would have really done well with. And I got a couple little ones there, but I got points on a bunch of other places too, so I ended up getting some good stuff. This was an interesting one that you guys both built really great dances, and so we were just hitting those dances constantly this game. And I remember in the first game, or the first time when we reviewed this, Chris said, yeah, there's that one space that I only used like once, you know, whatever it's called, the transfer space or the trade space. And this time it was like people were there every turn bumping somebody else off of that space, trying to optimize and take advantage of those dances. So, but that's how this game goes for me. Every single time it feels like there's different strategies that arise, and you just want to try to get to them and pick the pieces apart before somebody else nabs them from you. And it's just fun. This is just a super fun game for me every time.
Well, what you just described was exactly the experience that I had, because I think probably the reason Tim won on this one is because I think, Adam, you and I both had some strategies we were shooting for, and then each of us snatched that strategy out from the other by, you know, grabbing one of those carving tiles, or there was some other benefit tile that I think I had one where I was going to get a bunch of points for, I think it was exploration tiles on the board, and you got this card that gave you a bunch of them. So it was...
That's right.
But that's kind of what makes a good game, right? You know, that's as Andy Schwartz might say, that makes it brutal, but not mean.
Very true.
All right. Well, after Apiary, Adam's pick was a game he's been talking about for months, for years even. And this is Fractal Beyond the Void. Adam started setting up this big, colorful, bright 4X game that we reviewed back when it was an unpublished game back on Kickstarter, like 2.5 years ago. And by the way, so after we left this trip, I had about an 8-hour drive back home. And so I went back and listened to every podcast episode that was related to one of the games we played this weekend. And Fractal was one of them, just so I can kind of bring back the ghosts of old voices on some of these reviews. But Fractal Beyond the Void, interesting 4X game, asymmetric player powers. Chris, what happened?
What happened? Well, before I answer what happened, let me just say this is probably the closest thing that I had to a questionable experience this weekend. And it wasn't even that questionable. So maybe that's a testament to how good this weekend was, that I liked every game that we played. And the problem that I had with Fractal Beyond the Void was one that I think is very common among area control games, these kind of high aggression games. And that is the runaway winner or the runaway loser. I think it was the fact that halfway through this game, maybe a third of the way through this game, I felt so far behind that I don't think there's any way that I could have come back. And there's no, at least not that I'm aware of, no big catch-up mechanism that lets you get back into the game. That said, a lot of the stuff in this game was really exciting and fun. I think the combat, even though it can tend to draw out a little bit and maybe not be as engaging for someone who's not involved in the combat, it is so cool. It's like Blood Rage on steroids, where in Blood Rage you have these cards you play that you can sort of, you know, be clever and take out your opponent. That's one of the things I remember about Fractal from our review of it, and it was still true here, was these tactics cards that you have to play that get pretty in-depth in terms of how the tactics interact with each other. So someone who has an inferior force can actually do some really cool things to stop a superior force. I think that's great. I think it's one of the neatest combat mechanisms that's out there. But a lot of the other stuff you had to do to get the points just didn't sort of come intuitively to me. So I think on a next play, I would have a much better opportunity to score. I'd know better what I was doing. I think much less of a chance that I would get myself into that runaway loser mode. And to me, I was thinking while we were playing, and like, I kind of want to jump right back in and try it again because I completely blew it the first round. I want to try it again in a second round and try to regain some of my dignity.
Yeah, you talked about the combat there, Chris. The combat is really neat. Each combat card, you can upgrade it, and it gives you this extra little option that you get to do in addition to the top stuff. So you can upgrade it. There's a little bottom section that becomes active. And then you can get its elite version with throughout the course of the game. So you can have a more powerful, upgraded tactics card of each kind of version. Maybe that gives you a quicker initiative, so it activates before your enemy's one, or maybe it adds this supplemental attack that you get to do and force somebody out of the region that you're contesting. But having said that, the combat isn't necessarily super important in this game. I think the scoring criteria are the things to look at. So you see this game that reminds you of Eclipse, reminds you of this area control where you got to go in and bash the other guy. No, you have to be really careful when you're going to do that and pick your spots and maybe not even necessarily do that, because the way you're going to score is by these different scoring criteria. Maybe you need to have an influence of 4 to maximize your points, or maybe you need to have control of 2 productive worlds, and that'll give you the most points. So you really have to pay attention to what's going to give you points, and that's going to differ every single game. And I think that's a really neat aspect of this game. And then once you get to that second, I think it's era, you have to meet those that first era scoring criteria plus the additional second era scoring criteria. So it adds another layer of complication. How are you going to get all these things done? But it makes sense as you're spreading out and your engine's building more. You're going to have more stuff. So you have to kind of refocus or focus a little extra to get that second round of points. And I thought this game was great. It went to a very exciting conclusion. Chris, you came in, you did win a big combat with some sneaky tactics cards play. And you took away, I don't know, 3 points for me or a couple points for me. And so that was neat. You know, we had this exciting moment where you shouted, and I think you took a victory lap around the kitchen island and came back into the room. And that was pretty fun. And Tim ended up with the 1 point victory when all is said and done. So I had a great time playing this one. Tim, what'd you think of this one?
This was my surprise hit of the weekend, and I can't wait to play it again. I had a really, really good time with it. I thought the mechanisms were very neat. The scoring mechanism was very neat. And by the way, Chris, I think you misread the whole situation. The reason
of course you do.
That you did poorly
totally
was because you attacked me like you do in all these games. You picked me out. I said, this is not going to go well for you, Chris. And you said, too bad. I just like to beat down on Tim. And look what happened. But no, to be honest, I think there might have been an opportunity to come back. I mean, the scoring lets you do it anyway, because the second phase of the game doubles the scoring, or like gives you 1.5 times the scoring opportunity. So if you'd focus there instead of just trying to come back and take back what you had tried to take from me in the first place, I think you could have if you actually focused on winning and not just being mean, I think you could have actually.
Not just revenge.
Oh, my goodness.
I think you could have.
All right. Well, we can't let that stand. I need to respond to that. So first, I disagree about coming back, because in this one, a lot of the goals, I believe, had to do with technologies, and I didn't invest in technologies earlier on. And by the end of the game, it was basically no technologies, no points. And I ended up with no points because I didn't really have the technologies, and it was too late to get them. But on the other hand, the point I think that I took away from that was exactly what Adam said, which is you really do have to focus on those end game points. And that may sound obvious, but to me, the intuitive thing to do in an area control game like this, as you would in, name one, you know, the Eclipse, Second Dawn, you want to build up your fleets, you want to get more powerful, you want to expand, and you want to fight. And that just wasn't the path to victory here. So there was no karma involved in this. It wasn't Chris being mean to Tim. I was fighting when I shouldn't have been fighting.
Yeah, well, I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was fun. I think it was, I went back and listened to our old review on it. And generally we were, I would say, fairly positive. I think a lot of the same things that I liked about it this game, I liked about it last game. The combat, when you're not in it, you know, that was one of my, you know, my nitpicks when we reviewed it. And I was in a couple, you guys were in a couple combats without me this time, but I had fun watching them this time in a way that for some reason they dragged, maybe just because I think probably a big part that made this better is just that somebody was teaching it to us. And so it's not the most streamlined game, although it's not too bad. I think there's just, you know, there's some terminology and some things that are a little quirky here that if nobody knows how to play it, trying to learn it out of the rule book and just like recheck the rules and stuff like that could be a little heavy, but Adam had kind of done the work for us and came in and taught it. And so after his teach, I felt like I had a really good sense for how everything worked. And I thought it was great. There was one other complaint we had when we reviewed it. And that was that there was a mechanism that just felt like it felt really obscure. Like, and it was, I think it was called like Living Galaxies. That we didn't, at least maybe that comes into the campaign at some point, but there was nothing like that here. We had those little walls that moved around, but were those called the Living Galaxies, or were those called something else?
I forget. I think one of those are called the Living Galaxies. So there's these barriers. So yeah, that was like the confusing thing. And now there's just these little production. Those might be the Living Galaxies, the thing that have like a galaxy symbol on the backside, but there's some strange mechanisms. I don't know if they changed that or streamlined that, but it seemed like those were less confusing.
Yeah, from listening to our review, I was listening to what we explained, and whatever that was didn't exist in this game. So at least from my perspective, it was pretty streamlined. It was fun to explore. Exploring this galaxy was fun because you'd go to these little areas, and then, you know, if you flip over the card that's on it, if you just put forces in there, so then you can like flip over the card, and then the card has conditions for you to take over that thing. So it was like these little mini puzzles, and it didn't have to do with combat. Like there were points that you could get combat, but that was a very small part of where there was going to be any points from here. A max of 5 points that you could get in this game were going to be from actually winning combats, unless the point scoring conditions said anything for you. So for me, it was fun because like, it was well, we'll be talking about Voidfall, but it's a lot like Voidfall where you're kind of like just treating the other people as a threat that you need to kind of build up and respond to, but you can also just really work on your strategy. This game was fun. I had a great time playing it. I can't wait to play it again.
Great.
But after after three, you know, decently heavy games, my pick today was a little bit lighter. We wanted to go a little more streamlined. A game I was excited for you guys to get a chance to play, and this is The Quest for El Dorado by Chris's favorite designer, Reiner Knizia. This is a great little racing game where it's a deck builder, and your deck, your cards that you're going to reveal are going to kind of give you the icons you need to move across a map and race to the end of this kind of Indiana Jones-esque little adventure scene. What do you think?
Well, I had a medium amount of fun playing this way. It was light, it was breezy, and I don't know, I guess it was okay. It was a race through the jungle there trying to get to the end. And I thought it was, I don't know what I was expecting, if I was expecting anything cosmic. It was okay. I thought it was okay. I wish I could say it was super fun and I had a blast, but I had a medium fun time playing this one.
I'm going to say something now that I never thought I would find myself saying. Are you guys ready for this?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. I finally found a game by Reiner Knizia that I really, truly, deeply enjoyed. I had so much fun with this game. It put together so many things that I enjoy doing. This kind of the racing game, the deck builder. It actually reminded me a lot of, and I think one of you made this comment during the game, it was a lot like a streamlined, less complex version of Clank. You're drawing these cards to move around this map. You know, you need a sailor card to get across water. You need a adventurer card to get across the forest, that kind of thing. But it's all so simple, so streamlined. There's a limited number of cards. I think there was enough to keep it interesting, but there was a limited number of cards to understand that it was a big open kind of market. And just racing from the beginning of, you know, the very beginning of the game all the way up to that finish line, there was none of that wacky off-brand kind of scoring that Reiner Knizia likes to do. This is just a straight-up romp. I had a great time with it, and it didn't hurt that it was also my first win of the weekend. So that may have colored my opinion of it a little bit, but I really did have a fun time with this.
That's cool, Chris. I thought you would like it. Adam, I thought you'd like it a little bit more. I don't know. Was it because you only made it halfway across the map that pinged it a little bit for you?
that might have been it, Tim. I don't know. I didn't find the deck building super exciting. None of the cards were like that great. It was like, you know, this card can get you three of any color, and this card can get you one big thing, then you have to discard it. It seemed lackluster. There's nothing exciting about the deck building or the cards that really did it for me. So it just seemed, you know, okay.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. This is a game that for 30 minutes, you can't do much better for me. I think for the short playtime and stuff like that, I think it's a great game. But Adam, I'm guessing you probably regret that last minute purchase right before we came out to pick this up.
That's true. I was at the store shopping for my kid's friend's birthday party or something and saw it there. I was like, oh, I'm at Target and I can't resist buying board games. So I picked this one up for $30 or something like that and brought it with. I don't know if I regret it. We'll see if the family likes it. They're probably going to be like, what the heck is this, Dad? Get this out of here. And but maybe not. Who knows? Maybe they'll like it.
Well, Adam, if they don't like it, let me know. I'll take it off your hands. I had a lot of fun with it.
Sounds great.
Cool. So that night, this was our first night. We went out to dinner and decided to go play some pinball out. Found a local pub. But what was it? Foo Fighters machine, right? That's what we played the whole time.
We played the Foo Fighters, which is a machine that I have at home. And it was embarrassing how much not better than you guys that I did for a machine that I actually have in my own house. And yet you guys were right up there with me in score. Then again, my son plays with me and he crushes me every single time. So I have learned to live with humiliation in the world of pinball.
I got a hot take for you on this machine and many pinball machines. And that is that there's way too much luck involved. I think it's really silly that they made these machines with ways that will force you to not win sometimes. Like, obviously I suck at it. Like I was missing balls that I should have been hitting, but there's routes for that metal ball to go that you literally can't touch it. And that just seems like bad game design. Like it's literally just, we don't want you to play too long. So let's make sure that there's a way that the ball can get away and you can't touch it. So that's my feeling about pinball. I have fun playing it, but it's so frustrating to me that that ball can go to a place that you just, no matter how skilled you are, you couldn't stop it from going there.
Tim, didn't you say there's a guy that you always play board games with, and he's always like, oh, that dang random number generator. I can't stand that random number generator. That sounds a lot like that.
Yeah. I suppose it is. Mm. Anyway, so this was our first long day of games, and I'm starting to get the game set up for the next morning that we were going to play, but we didn't make it into playing it that night. So first thing next morning, Adam made his famous German, was it German pancakes, German lemon pancakes?
Yeah, I call them German pancakes. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but very thin pancake. And then you get them kind of spongy and nice. Then I put a nice coat of butter on that, so that soaks in. And then you got to tap on some powdered sugar, so it's nice and blanketed with that. Then you squeeze some lemon on top of that. It makes this kind of glaze, this little bit of frosting. So you got the sweet and the sour and the warmth and the squishiness and a little bit of crisp on that pancake too. So it's pretty nice.
All I got to say is if you ever have the opportunity, anybody that's listening, to get Adam to make you German pancakes, do it. He is the maestro. I could just eat those all day long.
Yeah. And what I think,
thank you, Chris. I
100% agree. These were amazing. But I think really the reason Adam did this is I think he was actually buttering us up to finally play Xenon Profiteers. So Xenon Profiteers is a deck building game about manufacturing Xenon and creating medical devices with it. Adam, what do you think of this? Was this your first three-player game of Xenon Profiteers?
Not just medical devices, all kinds of devices that you can make with Xenon. It's kind of an endless world of Xenon devices out there, which you'll discover by playing Xenon Profiteer. And I think this was my first. I kind of played this at that Comic-Con that I told you about. Okay. We were setting up and we had some time to kill, so we tried it there. But, you know, those were some casual gamers. So we got to play it with some serious gamers here, we'll say. And I had a blast playing this one. Tim, I know you're like, oh, theme, it's not wizards and orcs with staff, so I don't really like this game. But the deck building's here. The mechanisms are here. There's this little assistant action where you can sort of put that on a card instead of straight up buying a card to sort of reserve it or add money to it later on. I really like that mechanism. You're building out your little factory. That looks cool as it's going out. And the first one to get either five contracts or five upgrades triggers the game in. So there's a lot of neat things going on here. In addition to the deck building or deck cutting that you get to do in this game, which I think Chris had a good time. How'd you feel about Xenon Profiteer, Chris?
Okay, here's a hot take. Xenon Profiteer was the highlight of the weekend for me, at least in terms of great fun that I had that completely surprised me. Xenon Profiteer was so much fun. And part of that was what you just said, Adam. It was this deck thinning, which really, I mean, it's kind of fascinating to me that there's this deck building game where it's all about scrapping. I mean, the basic mechanism of the game is scrapping cards. The scrapping cards in deck building is one of my favorite things to do, because here, what you're doing is you're drawing these cards, you know, of air, where you're getting all the different elements that come in air, trying to scrap out everything that's not xenon, essentially distilling down the xenon, and then having the distilled xenon to use for your various contracts for things like medical devices or movie projectors. And mind you, Xenon Profiteer sounds almost like it's going to be some kind of space odyssey or something. It is not. This is like modern day manufacturing. There are companies that do what this game does right now. And so it is completely real world stuff. But what I was very, very fascinated by with this was just how much the actual xenon manufacturing process, at least as I understand it from this game, lends itself to the rule set of this game. That basically the game sort of designed itself, that you have this, you know, you have this gas that has to be removed by distilling it out from the other different elements in the air. So in the same way that removing the heads and the tails from your brew in a game of distilled just sort of lends itself so naturally to a certain mechanism, it was the same thing in Xenon Profiteer, and I had just so much fun. Thank you for introducing us to this highly thematic deck building game, Adam.
You're very welcome, Chris.
You know, we talk a lot about medieval farming and we talk a lot about Mediterranean trading, but I think I prefer both of them to modern manufacturing processes.
Awful. So disappointing.
But this game actually had some really clever mechanisms for a light deck builder. I did like the idea that you had to take all these things that you didn't want in your deck, and you did it regularly, not only to get the Xenon that you had to be able to distill out, but also you get some money when you did that. And then the whole goal was to kind of set up an engine that let you get out the right cards, so you could start to build these pieces that let you draw more cards or let you, you know, get discard extra cards than you would otherwise. It was very clever mechanically, and it was too early on a Saturday morning to be distilling elements and making Xenon, I guess. I don't know. I couldn't get behind the theme here, but it was a fun deck builder. And it's the right weight.
It's never too early to be distilling Xenon. Everybody knows that. And I know TC Petty III, the designer of this game, occasionally listens or will respond to the posts on Board Game Geek if we mention this game. Maybe he can tell us. I think the story goes that this game was designed with the intention of helping people learn the Xenon distilling process. I don't know if there's any truth to that, or maybe it's in the rule. There's a blurb in the rule book about it. But I think, you know, this game was worked on by someone who worked in a Xenon factory and wanted to help people learn how to distill Xenon.
Yeah. Well, it probably did that just fine. And again, I think the mechanics here for a deck builder were actually really fun. And it was the right weight. It's like a 25 minute game to play through this thing and mess around with this deck. It's exactly the right weight for a deck builder that's just going to be a little random. We'll talk about another deck builder that is not the right weight coming up here, but I think this one worked really well.
One thing I'll add on that is this game and Smartphone Inc. have convinced me that there is this subgenre thematically that we need to address, and that is games where the theme is so bad that it sort of circumnavigates the world back to good again. It's like, where you go, really? Like, somebody's gonna make a game about that? And then you play it and you're like, wow, that was so wacky, it was actually fun.
All right, well, moving on past Xenon Profiteer. The next game we set up, this was Chris's pick. It was one of the few great games he brought on the plane with him out here. This is a game we haven't played or talked about for a long time, and that was Godspeed. Godspeed is a game we did a feature review on, I want to say, like way back at episode 20 or something like that. But it was early on in the show, and we all played it together on Tabletop Simulator after Chris had gotten his Kickstarter copy sent to him. And I went back and listened to the review on that one as well. So I'll bring back some old thoughts here. But how'd Godspeed go for you guys?
Well, I don't know. If it wasn't Chris's pick, it was going to be my pick, because I wanted to go back and play this one too. We had talked about, I think it was the interesting worker placement or most interesting worker we did on an episode we did a couple weeks back. And Chris had mentioned this one. And I said, oh my gosh, that is really cool how Godspeed works. We played it again, and it was really cool. I had so much fun going back to Godspeed and playing it again. I think the key part of this was you have that neat part of one worker that's going to, you know, have the option to get removed if you want to avoid a penalty or potentially get a bonus if everybody removes their worker for that round and works together to solve some sort of issue. Or, you know, that thematically, you're going to go fix a bridge over a canyon, so all your engineers get pulled out for that round, for instance. So I think that is really neat. And then the next phase of this game is the most epic part of these, the most critical part of this game, I think. So you have to do this bid. You can bid up to all your workers if you want to for three cards in a three-player game, three cards and a first-player token. So that is a huge decision, because whatever you bid, you know, your workers are worth anywhere from, I think, 3 to 7 points. Those are going to be gone for the rest of the game, and you have a limited amount of spaces after that. So you have to manage your workers to get these different benefits right at the beginning to accomplish what you want to do later on. And you're only going to get to play, what is it, 2 workers, 3 workers, and the rest of the round to try to get done what you need to do. So I don't know. I was a little bit sour on this game, I think, the first time we played, or mediocre on it at least. And this time I just had a blast. And I think it's a fantastically tight game where you have to make that critical decision in that, I think, is that second phase of every round. What a fun game. I'm glad we went back to this one. And Chris, your version is beautiful with all those components. So fun. The tactility, those chunky circular workers, that was fun to play with. And the resources, what a blast playing Godspeed.
Yeah, I agree, Adam. Such a fun game, and it's such an underrated game. It's one you don't hear about very often. In fact, it's underrated by me. I mean, I've had this game for years now, and I've only played it a couple times. So it was nice to get back to it. And you pointed out what I think are two of the most interesting mechanisms. So I won't go back over those again. I think you hit the nail on the head. But it's one of those games that I enjoy where you have certain types of workers that do certain types of work. And so you have to have the right kind of worker on hand. But beyond that, I mean, the theme and the production of this game is just phenomenal. It's this huge, colorful board. The pieces are chunky. And even if you had the cardboard pieces, I still think it'd be a really nice looking game. And just the story behind this, the whole idea is that the space race was fake, that it was because we really found this wormhole to another planet in another galaxy. And so the idea of going to the moon was just there to sort of distract people from what was really happening. And so that first round was the event, you know, some terrible catastrophes happening. How are you going to respond to it? The second phase was Earth is sending supplies. Who's going to get the best supplies? So all the thematics of this game were absolutely were fascinating. I just think it's a clever idea in such a fun game to play. So Tim, what was your take after the second play?
It was fantastic. I loved it. One of my favorite plays of the weekend. I went back and listened to the review on this, and we all generally had pretty nice things to say about it. And the one criticism that I had at the time was that those worker placement spaces didn't do anything interesting enough, because three or four of the spaces you can take out of the 10 that are available are just draw cards or play a card. But that I was totally wrong about that. There's so much tension in those spaces because they're the only way you can build these buildings, which are the key scoring mechanism in the game. And it was such a tight race to that. And there's so much intricacy that I even picked up on this play that I'd missed in the past. Like, do I send my commander, you know, my red ship to go out and do this shared, you know, this shared event? Well, if everyone else is doing that, I got free run of the red spaces, so I could hold mine back and just make sure that I can do whatever I want to on the red spaces this time. So there's all these great little things. It's so streamlined, it goes so quick, and it has a ton of interaction. This game is great, and I think a big part of it is just my own kind of growth in that I think games that are streamlined and just fun, like this one is, are just, it's important to me. It's not always just about pulling levers and doing as many different things as you can. I still like some of those games, but I'm liking more and more games like this. And so Pulsar to me feels the same weight. You know, it feels kind of the same amount of like quick, snappy turns, smart decisions. And maybe that's because I've had a few plays of it at this point, so it feels more streamlined. But that's why I think I like Pulsar so much. I think that's why I like Godspeed so much too. This game was great. I'm really glad we got a chance to get back and play it again. And I'd love to play this again on any future BGHT con we do. Now, we have a whole bunch more games that we played this weekend, but we're going to cover those on next week's episode. So hopefully you enjoyed coming down memory lane with us on this Big Bear weekend part one. Before we wrap up the show this week, I do have a listener review to shout out. We always appreciate when people leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts or on Facebook or wherever wherever you listen or find the show, leaving us reviews, ratings. It's great. It helps other people find the show. We really appreciate it. So the review I had this week was from, this is from Andy in Great Britain. And the title was excellent. It's a 5-star review. And they just said, this is a great listen, informative and fun. Being new to the hobby, only through buying Andor and My Little Everdell to play with my 6-year-old, this podcast has opened up my eyes to the hobby and the wonderful amount of games. Wow, Andy. So you're really just getting into the hobby with your kids, and you're actually sitting through these long, rambling episodes about board games. Amazing. Good on you. I'm glad you're appreciating it, and hope we introduce you to some fun games, some fun experiences that you get to dig into.
Yeah, and it's so cool that you're taking that journey with your kids. I mean, that's a lot of fun. Hey, and before we wrap up, I just want to do a quick shout out. I'm going to do something we rarely do, and it's a little bit of a retraction. We actually got an email from a listener, Ryan C. in Calgary, that commented on some commentary that I had made. It was mostly me. Tim may have jumped in on this a little bit too, but it was mostly me, kind of, you know, busting on Clemens Franz's artwork in Orléans. Although actually, I think in retrospect, now that I'm thinking about it, Tim was defending it a bit as being one of his better operations, and I was pretty much dogging on it.
Yep.
But what Ryan C. in Calgary said was, you know, the reason why this art is one of Clement Franz's best projects is because it was highly inspired by the art of medieval France. And he pointed me to a resource, a web encyclopedia, that showed a painting, which I'm not sure if this is the name of it or if it's just a caption, but it's called, it says Cleric, Knight, and Workman representing the three classes. It's by an unknown artist, but it is clearly of a certain style, and it's from that period in time. And the idea of it was that it laid out the different classes of people in medieval France. There are the oratores, those who pray, bellatores, those who fight, and laboratores, those who work. And so Ryan's argument was, this is actually representing something historically. And so I feel about as different about the art now as I possibly could. And I appreciate that what he was doing was actually trying to represent something that was similar to the art of the period. Now, the one last piece of commentary that I'll give on that is that this ancient medieval artist, whoever it was, this unknown artist, actually did have the front of the helmet is where the slit is, where the eye holes are. So you would think that if they got that right back in medieval times, that these days, with our modern painting technology and our understanding that faces are on the front of the head and not on the side of the head, that Clemens Franz may have made a different stylistic choice. Why that happened, we may never know. It may just be unknowable.
But at least you're right, Chris. There, it did give us a little reference back to the weirdness of the subjects on the front cover of the Orleans box. But yeah, thanks for that, Ryan. That was it was a fun read. All right. Well, if you come back next week, we'll be finishing up this series. You can hear about the rest of the weekend. Also, we're coming to the first month of our Patreon account, and we're going to be giving away a board game. We're going to be giving away the advanced review copy of Wormspan that we received from Stonemaier Games. And so we'll be drawing one of our friend of the show level supporters at the end of this month. And then starting next month, we'll be doing another giveaway. I'm going to be giving away my copy of Sleeping Gods, Distant Skies, the Kickstarter version with all the upgraded components and everything. So that'll be next month's giveaway. So if you want to get in on those giveaways and support the show and join us and our community over there with lots of fun, exclusive content and discussions and polls and content polls and things like that, join us at patreon.com/boardgamehottakes. Until next week, take care, everybody.
Good night, all.
Bye-bye. We might have lost Tim. We totally lost Tim. He's just smirking at me.
Oh, it's got the droopy face on one side too on my screen, so it looks like he's having a stroke.
He's having a stroke.
Are you having a stroke, Tim?
He's having a stroke.
Oh, now his eyes disappeared. And now he's laughing.
He's laughing at us. He can barely hear. Tim, you're like glitching out all over the place, man.